Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. The program that you're about to watch was filmed in the Caribbean aboard the New Amsterdam during the National Review post-election cruise. That is just a few days after the election of November 2012. Uncommon Knowledge, a production of the Hoover Institution, today at sea with National Review.
In the presidential election of 2012, the gender gap proved the biggest since Gallup began tracking the gender gap 6 decades ago. Today on Uncommon Knowledge, Midge Dector, Mona Charon, and women. Taping at sea with National Review, Uncommon Knowledge, now. Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. A native of St. Paul, editor and author Midge Dector attended the University of Minnesota, the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, and New York University. She served as executive editor of Harper's and a frequent contributor to Commentary. Her books include Liberal Parents, Radical Children, An Old Wife's Tale, and most recently, Rumsfeld, A Personal Portrait. Born in New York City and raised in Livingston, New Jersey, Mona Charon attended Barnard College in Manhattan and later George Washington University Law School. Ms. Charon's early career included spells at National Review magazine, as well as in the White House, where she and I became friends, and where she served in a variety of roles, including speechwriter to Mrs. Reagan. In 1987, Mona launched a syndicated column now published in more than 200 newspapers. She is the author of Useful Idiots: How Liberals Got It Wrong in the Cold War and Still Blame America First, and Do-Gooders: How Liberals Harm Those Who They Claim to Help and the Rest of Us. Midge Dector and Mona Charon, welcome.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Segment one, what happened? Mitt Romney carried men by 8 percentage points and lost women by 12. 20-point gap. That's the biggest gender gap since Gallup began tracking the gender gap in 1952. Who's to blame, Mitt Romney or women?
Mitt Romney is to blame, if you call it blame. I suppose he's clearly a very nice man, and he's clearly very nice to women, and he's obviously extremely nice to his wife. But I don't think that he really understands what's going on with women. And I do not say this as a passionate feminist. In fact, I'm an anti-feminist.
We'll get to that.
But I think there was something patronizing about how sweet he was. I felt it myself. And I would be inclined to say very harsh things to women because I think they deserve being told harsh things these days. But I don't think that they are appealed to by that kind of sweetness. That's one thing.
Mona?
He was too nice. Well, I don't know. I'm going to demur just a little bit, even though I revere Midge and have been very influenced by her thinking over the years. But I would say, first of all, if Romney was to blame, it was because he failed to rebut the unbelievable onslaught of negative ads that were run against him by the Obama machine. Ads that suggested that he was going to, not just that he was pro-life, which is fine, and by the way, a majority of the population is now pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
52% describe themselves that way. There's even a plurality of women who are pro-life. So more women describe themselves as being pro-life than pro-choice. So the people who are rushing to say, aha, you know, it's abortion, that's the mistake the Republicans made, this was an abortion vote, I doubt it very much. But I do think that Romney's failure to rebut the idea that, you know, he was going to, according to the Obama ads, he was going to take away birth control, women, not just that it wouldn't be subsidized by Obamacare,
right,
but that women would not have, quote, access to birth control, that the Lilly Ledbetter Act we saw transformed from a piece of legislation that basically was the Lawyers Entitlement Act, that...
The lily that, but just explain what the lily that better act was.
So when Obama first came into office, there was one piece of outstanding legislation that the Democrats had wanted and couldn't get under the previous administration, and it was a tinkering with the statute of limitations on claims of workplace discrimination for women.
Right, right.
Okay, now... Equal pay for equal work has been the law of the land since the 1960s, since the early 1960s Civil Rights Acts. So, but in the hands of the Obama people, they transformed the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and the, Obama bragged about this throughout the whole campaign. I signed legislation demanding that women get equal pay for equal work. It was never rebutted. Well, you're hesitating.
No, because I'm about to. You're accusing Mitt Romney of patronizing women. Get ready for the next question. The second biggest gender gap in the six decades that Gallup has been tracking it took place in 1980, when Ronald Reagan won men by 28 points and women by only 10, an 18 percentage point gap. So I put it to you that men will always vote for low taxes and a strong defense, and women will always vote for a big welfare state.
No, well... I don't think so. See, I think that it's time, it's really long since time, to stop with this notion of women. And
let's get rid of women.
Well, we should get rid of a lot of ideas about women. I can't remember now about Reagan, and I was so passionately for him, and everybody I knew was, and I no longer remember what it was about him. But I am thinking about this. It's how many years have gone by that politicians and public figures have been trying to sweeten the pot for women. Women don't need this. I think if they were treated with a little more toughness and a little more genuine respect, people would do better.
Okay.
Politicians, could I
jump in and throw in some numbers?
Sure.
Okay. Women have become, since 1980, a bigger percentage of the voting public than they were. That's a problem because the gender gap has persisted for decades.
Right.
They do vote, for, as you say, for Democrats more than Republicans. So women are now 54% of the electorate, which is huge. I don't know why men aren't voting as much, but they aren't. There are many more single women, which is a huge problem for Republicans.
We now have the statistic for the first time in American, not for the first time in decades, for the first time in American history, first time ever, there are more women over 30 who are single than are married.
That's correct. And while Romney won 53% of married women, he lost single women by
2 to 1.
Yeah, 2 to 1. So we have more single women, we have more women voting, and we have trends that show that marriage is on the decline. And those are structural problems for Republicans going forward. There's no question about it.
What do you make of this statement by Ann Coulter? Quote, single women want the federal government to be their man.
Right? Women want security, and they either want it
to be... See, I get to quote a woman to elicit a quotation like that from a woman. You may slap me at any time you'd like.
No, I think, of course, women want security. And what's more, women need security. And they have not known how to ask for what it is they want and need for some time because they have been the objects of a movement whose tail end we now, the consequences of whose tail end we now see.
Okay, let me, segment two, The Way We Live Now, Midge Dechter in An Old Wife's Tale. I'm quoting you. Women of the present day lead lives that are more complex and burdensome, spiritually speaking, than those of the women of any other time. Close quote.
Yes, that's because they have freedom, and freedom is very burdensome for people. I mean, freedom was very burdensome for men, and it was certainly women demanded freedom, and it is a great burden. It's a lot easier to be a subject nation than to be a free people.
Mona?
The biology dictates this, okay? It is very physically, emotionally, and spiritually taxing to give birth and to nurture children. And for millennia, women, men, everybody understood that women need to be supported during this time when they are giving so much support to infants and young children, and that's why we have marriage. And the notion that women today are thinking that marriage is optional, that they can do it themselves, that it's a perfectly viable alternative not to marry, is a civilizational catastrophe.
I'm not too quick in any event, but when it comes to women's issues, I really don't understand. So this is not just trying to ask interesting questions. This is help. As you put it in here, Midge, the American woman, this is after the Second World War begins, the 50s and 60s, was now free to pursue an education of her choosing or not, to take a job or pursue a career, and to marry or not, as and when she saw fit. This is freedom. This would be on the face of it good. And yet at the same time, this new freedom is accompanied by a political movement, feminism, which you describe as, quote, a curious combination of galloping self-pity and driving ambition, close quote. Why would it not be the case that women in the millions say, thank goodness, the drudgery of housework is off my back because I have a microwave I'm not ancient, and I can remember how hard my mother worked with a vacuum cleaner that didn't suck very well and a stove that had to be cleaned once. And this is gone. Why don't women just enjoy themselves? Instead, this is met with a movement of political anger. Why?
Well, I think the movement of political anger is subsiding, and something else is taking place, really. it was... The worst thing that happened to American women was when World War II was over and life was going back to normal,
right,
and there were houses being built to live in and communities being created, along came a group of radical women who said, oh, you poor thing, you're living in a suburb and you're suffering and you're full of illness and you're
the
this and that.
The comfortable concentration camp.
The comfortable, yes, right.
Right.
I mean, never had women had it so blessedly good. Especially, they were now in better health. The most radical thing that happened to women is contraception.
End of the Second World War comes along, the material circumstances, the economy prospers, the men come back from the war, families are being formed, Levittown is being built, suburbs are being built. Life is better for women. And yet we get, at coincident with this, this angry radical feminist movement. Why do better conditions seem to prompt anger?
Well, I think there's nothing more tempting, more sinfully tempting, and not just to women, but it happened to women, and it didn't happen to men, than being told, oh, you poor darling thing, you are really suffering. Oh, I am? Oh, you mean they stuck me in this house and they gave me a bunch of kids and everything? and I have to live in a suburb while my husband goes off to the city? Have you read Betty Friedan? The classic book that started this movement. My husband goes off to the city where he has this romantic professional life while I'm stuck back here in this horrible house with this bunch of kids. If you take somebody and you want to offer them pity, it's very hard. You have to have a really, really good character to resist that.
To say nonsense.
But yes.
But something had to have rung true, right? It seemed to resonate with no?
Ah, yeah. But what rang true was that women had, and no one has, it seems to me, has really taken the measure of the really radical alteration of women's lives, which is they now control birth.
But just when they can decide when and whether to have children, we see this decoupling of marriage from childbearing, just when we're perfectly able to prevent unwed childbearing through technology.
Yes, yes, yes.
We've erased the stigma against it, and what we have now seen is a bifurcation of America, where highly educated, college-educated, wealthier women are getting married just almost in the same numbers that they always did, and they are living a great American dream with their husbands in the suburbs. Yes, they have jobs, and they you know, multitask, and things are good for that population. But for those with some college or no college, those at the lower end of the economic spectrum, marriage is collapsing, and so are their economic prospects, and so is the well-being of children of those women.
And so for those of us...
And so have their men. Marriage is collapsing because their men are collapsing.
All right, let's
And what has caused their men to collapse? Well, you create a culture in which... there is a constant stream of attack on men for what it is they do. They are at fault for having to make a living. They are the ones who do the work. They are the ones, and
the
besides
the society in which American men live has become engaged in what can only be called a conspiracy against them.
Yes, I think that's true, and so. There was a point at which you could begin to hear men saying, oh, is that what you think of me? Okay, well, in that case, so long, kiddo.
Well, and
you can get along without me very well, goodbye. And they headed for the hills, and those who stayed home headed for the hills spiritually.
We do see this throughout modern developed countries that with welfare states.
Right.
That it's now economically possible to be a single mother. It's not easy, God knows, but it is economically possible to raise children with just a mother in the home, and we see this throughout Western Europe, we see it in other countries, we see it here. Unless, I guess, there's that lash of necessity, that fear of real privation, people will make poor decisions about their families. And one of the jobs of conservatives, it seems to me, is to argue strenuously for... doing what's best for women, for the well-being of women and their children, is
so
marriage.
How do we know? I'm a Martian. I just came here from a different planet. I look at the recent history that you're talking about, and I see that at the moment that women's health becomes better, and they're freed from the drudgery of housework, and they're free to choose the cycle and timing of reproduction and so forth, and whether or not to marry... And what I see as the result is they stop marrying, they start having children out of wedlock at a hugely increasing rate. So I, the Martian, conclude to myself, marriage must have been miserable all along, because the first moment the society got the chance to attack it and break free from it, it did. But you're saying that's not true. You're saying culture is lying to women and they're falling for the lie.
Well, they fell for the lie. I think they're unfalling for it. And I think you probably, I predict that things will begin to change after a while, because even a welfare state, which provides an unmarried young woman with the possibility of having kids without a husband, is not, that's not going to last very long. Because it's not a satisfactory life for them.
Okay.
So well, there'll be another movement.
If I could just quote the great Charles Murray, who said regarding the way upper middle class and upper class women live, preach what you practice. That would be so helpful, because you know you have lots of very feminist and pro-liberation women who are living in a way that is best for themselves and for their children. And if they would simply preach what they practice, this country would be a lot better off, and women at the lower end of the spectrum would be.
Let's return to men just a moment. I want to quote you again, Midge, in An Old Wife's Tale. It is the boys, you're writing about your sons, your son and your grandsons, it is the boys who are in some ways more to be worried about. The true health and welfare of a man depends on some woman's insistence that he harness his energies for the defense and support of her and the family they will make together. close quote. So you are not just saying you are not just saying that women are making a mistake and men get to say, for once we're free of that response. You're saying this is a catastrophe for men as well.
Yeah, of course it is.
You believe the same.
I absolutely do. I think that men derive a great deal of their sense of self. You know, the act of giving birth and caring for children tends to be a big part of our definition of ourselves as women. It comes naturally. It's God-given. But a man requires a relationship with a woman to have that connection with his children and that sense of the importance of his role as a father. It's more socially constructed rather than biological. And it's key for men's sense of their own worth in the world and their self-esteem.
Yes, well, look, the scariest statistic now for the future is that the number of young men going to college being so much smaller than that of young women going to college. And if this keeps up, what kind of a life is this? What's going to happen to this terrible game between men and women, which has become really something?
One more question about men,
fearsome.
And men and marriage. Now, you write about your upbringing, you write about the Depression, about the war, and what's very clear in this memoir, and one reason I love it, is that there is a beautiful portrait of the world that was ending just before Mona and I came on the scene. And when you were a girl, this notion that marriage was optional, that you could easily have children without a man, or, this was,
unheard
it was not, it was not that it was unthinkable, it was just unheard of. It wouldn't even
Absolutely.
Have occurred to anyone. So how do we go from thousands of years, from time immemorial, some kind of union between man and woman is taken for granted. We come into historical times, biblical times. It's in scripture. It's in English common law. It is recognized and supported by every cultural and legal construct we have until the day before yesterday when it collapses.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, one of the things that happened, I don't know. I mean, it would take a great genius to answer that question fully.
Well, we have one here, but it is television, so you won't have time.
No, but one of the things that a radical thing happened to women, the most radical thing that has happened to the lives of women and to women, and they don't think about it because we're all ingrates, actually, is that is contraception, which has now been given into their keeping. They now determine. And this was something, life was dangerous for women. Sex was dangerous for women. Even married sex was dangerous for them because of the childbearing question. Now women decide whether they're going to have kids and whether that's, of course, the legalization of abortion has even doubled the weight of this. Am I going to have this child? Am I going to have next year's child? Do I want this child? Women never had the possibility of dealing with motherhood in this way. And it's a terrible burden.
Well, it is.
Actually.
Without sounding excessively harsh, I do think that sometimes people have to be helped to avoid the worst decisions. And by continuing to, you know, we had a Welfare Reform Act in 1996 because as a society we all realized that we were subsidizing behavior that was very destructive. That it really wasn't a good idea for single women to have baby after baby after baby with the state being the daddy and supporting them. And so as a society, we
And it was as a society. It was Republicans who first enacted that,
Democrats.
But it was Bill Clinton who signed it.
Yes, and many Democrats supported it.
Right.
Now it's been largely repealed by the Obama administration through regulation and other things. And so it remains to be seen what will happen. But that was a necessary corrective because without the cash to permit this bad decision making, it won't happen. Even with the pill and all the rest of it.
Segment 4, Having It All. A little glimpse of where we stand today. This past September, Deborah Spar, who's the president of your alma mater, Barnard College, wrote an article that got a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. The title, Why Women Should Stop Trying to Be Perfect. All I would like to do is read a few passages and have the two of you respond, comment. Quote, there is undeniably still a women's problem in the United States, and part of this intractable problem is that women are struggling far more than is necessary, not only to have that ephemeral all, but to do it all alone. Close quote. The noble isolated struggle. What do you make of that, Mona?
I don't disagree with any of that. I think that's great. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, except there's one thing left out. The thing that's left out is the role of men in this.
But surely that's what she meant. She said they're trying to do it alone.
Yeah, she does come to that.
Women are trying to do it alone. Right. Yes, right. But also, one of the reasons that they're trying to do it alone is there's a process that went on. And one of the things is that the earliest women's movement, women were saying to men, I had colleagues, I was working in an office with men who would come into the office gloomy every day because there had been consciousness raising sessions in their houses, and one of these guys especially would come home every Wednesday or Tuesday or whatever it was, and his house was full of women who were sitting and attacking men. Okay, so the men played a part in this after all, and what they were saying is, if you can get along without me, baby, so long. Because right. I can sure get along without this.
Deborah,
and, I mean, this was a two-way process.
Right.
After
well, I agree with you about the hostility between the sexes, but let me just add that men cannot get along without women, and they are much worse off when they are not married. I mean, their rates of health and their longevity and everything else is much worse for single versus married men.
Deborah Spar again. One possibility is simply to acknowledge that women's destinies is something different from men's and stop complaining about it. That's one possibility.
However,
hardly seems fair, either to the generations who fought so hard for women's freedoms or to those who have not yet had the opportunity to give these freedoms a try. Close quote. What are you going to do with that one?
Oh, for heaven's sake. You know, this is this railing against God and nature. You know, why is it? It's so unfair. Unfair that men tend to do the dirty and dangerous jobs in an economy in hugely disproportionate numbers. The coal miners and the dangerous, and the Navy SEALs and whatever else. So that's just the way we're made. And I think that we have, as Midge likes to point out, and has on many occasions, you know, life for women in the United States of America today is the most privileged, wonderful existence of women in the history of the world. And I'm for the let's not complain about it and let's appreciate what we have.
Two more quotations here, both brief. The only way, again, this is the president of Barnard College, the only way that American women will ever solve the women's problem is by recognizing the quest for perfection is a myth. If women want to have both families and jobs, something has to give.
I interviewed one of the editors of the New York Times, who she's a fairly high-ranking editor at the New York Times. Her name is Joyce Pernick. She was the Metropolitan, editor of the Metropolitan. And she was also a Barnard graduate. And she gave a talk at Barnard with my active encouragement, because she asked me, should I say this? And I said yes. And she said to these women...
Great egger on, you are.
Yeah, right. Oh, I got her into trouble. And she said, I would not be the Metropolitan Editor of the New York Times if I had had kids, because it's an 80-hour-a-week job, and you can't do that and also have kids. I would have been something else. You know, I would have had a career, but it would have been more flexible, etc. And the women on the New York Times, when she gave that speech, were livid. They just cannot accept that there are trade-offs in life. And this is so juvenile. Everybody makes trade-offs. Men do, too. Nobody, quote, has it all. And
we get the president of Barnard College saying, ladies, you have to make choices. This isn't exactly some great intellectual breakthrough, but it is at least a first glimmering of a return to sanity. Will you give it that much?
Well, a return to sanity. What we need is not a return to sanity. What we need is a return to gratitude. Mm. And
also,
a return
don't forget
to
that with
good
tech-
sense and a return to the recognition that life has limits. All kinds of things. Partly American culture shortchanges people on this, but there's nothing more radical. There is no single sentence more radical than that there are no or should be no differences between men and women, right? That's including careers and lives and everything. And people have always known this.
Really quick point. The other great thing that we have to be grateful for is that there are so many different ways now to combine career and family that weren't available to our mothers and their mothers.
Listen to the final quotation. Again, this is the president of Barnard College, your alma mater. Quote, American women may want to consider returning to the kinds of social structures that prevailed in earlier decades, like coffee clutches and neighborhood clubs. How about organizing babysitting collaboratives or potluck suppers? I ask you, graduate of Barnard College, what does this mean that the president of Barnard is now saying coffee clutches and potluck suppers?
Boy, did she clear this with Betty Friedan?
All right, segment five, what is to be done? Let's return to this 12 percentage points by which Mitt Romney lost the women's vote. What is the Republican Party to do? What are conservatives to do?
What are conservatives to do?
Well, one thing is rebut the lies so that you're not running against this fraudulent image of some sort of character who's going to take away your birth control and all the things that we mentioned earlier in the program. So that's one thing. And the other is that you pitch it as, I think that there was a failure on the part of Romney to make the economic argument, because if you look at the exit polls, women were most concerned about the economy, just like men. The notion that they voted on women's issues is not true. They voted, like men, on the economy. They are, though, more liberal, and you have to make the case that a thriving private sector will give them better jobs with better benefits and better lives for themselves and their families.
So let's address the kind of background question.
I have a footnote to add to this, or maybe it's not a footnote. Maybe it's a whatever you call a head note to the chapter. I don't know. I think one of the things that conservatives ought to begin to do is reintroduce the idea of gratitude. Damn it, we should all be on our knees in gratitude in this country.
I don't think that works politically.
I suppose
you've got it
doesn't.
So good, ladies. Shut up and don't ask me for anything.
No, not you got it so good, shut up. And we've all got it so good. And we are in danger of throwing it away because we're greedy. And human beings are greedy. Greed is one of the great human sins. But nevertheless, every once in a while, you have to stop and say, enough of this.
Can I ask, you've raised sons, you have grandsons, someday, God willing, you will have grandsons as well. You find yourself telling them things like, I'm asking, but do you find yourself telling them things along the lines of, here's what the mainstream culture will tell you. That's not true. Here is the way you should behave. You find that?
I found that with my children. I had children in the 50s and 60s, and I found that I was saying to my children, all of them, my daughters as well as my son, this is not, what they're telling you is not true.
30 years ago, when I was a student at Dartmouth, Malcolm Muggeridge, the great British journalist, came and spoke, and I did an interview with him for the student newspaper. And he said, well, we're all in the position these days of St. Augustine watching the decline of Rome. So you can imagine a couple of Roman senators being toweled off after their baths, and one says to the other, things aren't what they used to be, are they? And to me, as a 20-year-old, that was such a shocking thought that he was blithely simply taking to be admitted that Western civilization was essentially over and we lived in the final moments of antiquity. And of course he was wrong. And it bothered me, but later that same year Margaret Thatcher was elected. John Paul II visited Poland. The Cold War begins to come to an end. Ronald Reagan announces for president. And now it feels that maybe he was just off by three decades. And he mentioned in 410 the sack of Rome by Alaric. But Alaric was a barbarian who invaded Rome because the Romans would not permit him and his tribe to become citizens. He wanted what Rome had. And what we are experiencing now is completely unprecedented. Women are not women, men are not men, marriage is not marriage. Something really deeply wrong is taking place. And so as conservatives, what do we do about it? But also as people who are raising families, it feels to me for the first time in my own life that I really am suspicious of the wider culture and feel an urge to withdraw and just to make sure my own kids are right. Do you feel that? Do you sense what I'm talking about?
I sense it.
Slap me, by the way. Maybe I'm being ungrateful. Just reach across and slap me.
I won't deny that in the past week, which was a very hard week in the wake of a devastating election loss, which many of us felt was key to the future of the country, that I've had moments like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also important to remember, as conservatives and as Americans who love their country, that there have been moments before. In my own lifetime, there have been moments where I thought we were at the end and turned out to be quite wrong. When you and I were in the Reagan White House, I remember thinking that the communists were going to be, they were going to win.
Right. True.
Okay? And there were a lot of reasons to think that at the time. Our civilization was too soft and we didn't have what it took to stand up to this sort of Spartan, very determined communist movement around the world. And there were lots of evidence. And when Carter was president, they took over 13 new countries.
Yep.
We go through all of that. And it did turn around, and we were victorious. And the people who had
Like Joan of Arc. I feel much better. I feel much better.
The people who had confidence and who had a sunny disposition and who looked forward with optimism, people like Reagan, turned out to be right. People who were darker and a little more suspicious and a little bit more likely to try to pull in their horns, like I will confess me at some moments in the 1980s, were wrong. So it's important to keep that in mind.
Okay, last question. Think of the young women at NYU, your alma mater, or Barnard who are listening to this. In a sentence or two, what would you like to say to the 19, 20, 21-year-old woman who's able to take advantage of all the freedoms and is about to launch herself into American life? Midge?
Well, the first thing I would say is that you should know that you live as few women as practically no women have ever been privileged to live before. Get down on your knees about that. That's the first thing. Look at you. You are healthy. You are going to be healthy. Look at me. You want to know how old I am? You know what I would be looking like if I were my age sitting here 50 years ago? I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here, in fact. You are lucky, you are beautiful, you are healthy, you are going to be healthy. You are not going to be wasted by childbearing. You're not going to have 12 children. You're going to have 3, maybe. If you do, it's time to be reminded, to tell yourself that you are one of the luckiest people who ever got born on this earth. That's, if you begin with that, you will find that you will, and you are healthy, you will have enough energy to pursue your ambitions and have your children and be nice to a man because you're going to need him. And you will have enough energy left over to be nice to him because He needs, it's very simple. Men and women need different things. A man needs, he needs a place of safety. He goes abroad in the world and he has to work and he and his ego depends on his fulfilling certain obligations.
Those hotshot jobs in Manhattan that Betty Friedan wrote
about. The hotshot.
Easy to overestimate.
Oh, yes, right, of course. I mean, she described how men get, living in the suburbs, get on the train and go to Wonderland every day. And they need a place of safety and a place of appreciation, and this will be repaid by your getting protection. The relations between the sexes have not really changed, except they've been made so much easier if you would only be grateful enough to recognize this.
Mona?
I would say to young women, there will be choices that you'll have to make in your life. And please don't feel that if you choose your children over a big career move, that you're letting down the team somehow. Mm. You know, that this is a betrayal of your femininity or of something that's more important than your family. If you choose your family, and it is, as I said earlier, it is so easy now to have both and to do both. And there's plenty of time in our long lives because we are healthy, thank God. To do many things with your life, professionally and personally, but sometimes choices need to be made. Kids are very demanding. Sometimes kids are not, they don't pop out of the womb perfect. They have special needs. There are issues that you're going to face. And if you choose them, you're doing something wonderful for them. You're doing something wonderful for yourself and your husband. And you're doing something wonderful for your society also. So don't feel that being a modern woman means always choosing the career over family.
Mona Charon and Midge Dechter, thank you. At Sea with National Review, for Uncommon Knowledge, I'm Peter Robinson.